All right, our seventh case for this morning is Sandra Sikorski against Acting Commissioner Berryhill.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jim Brown representing the plaintiff appellant Sandra.
Be sure you stand in front of the microphone and speak up.
Oh, gotcha. Representing the plaintiff appellant Sandra Sikorski in this matter. This is an appeal of the final decision of Social Security Administration denying the plaintiff's claim for disability insurance. The plaintiff worked until about 2008 and became unable to work due to her Crohn's disease, or her history of neck pain, her depression, and her ADHD. For purposes of our discussion today and what's in the brief, I believe that the Crohn's disease, the judge's treatment of the Crohn's disease, and the judge's treatment of the claimant's depression and ADHD warrant the most scrutiny here. I should note that the plaintiff earned enough work credits under Social Security to be insured for benefits through March 31st of 2012, so the relevant period of inquiry is 2010 through 2012. the issue being whether the plaintiff was disabled during that period of time. A main contention of the plaintiff at the administrative hearing and in our briefs is that she has essentially stomach pain and diarrhea due to Crohn's, which caused her to run to the bathroom unexpectedly, perhaps 6 to 9 times during a day without
warning. But she's had Crohn's, as the ALJ pointed out, for years. And so one point that I think persuaded the ALJ was that the record didn't suggest that the Crohn's, that this problem that you're describing, was all that much worse now. I mean, she's always needed this kind of access to restroom facilities.
Right. I know the ALJ said that, and the ALJ relied a lot upon the fact that the only real non-conservative intervention for the Crohn's was a colon resection in 2005, and that she had been treated with medication management since that time. The claimant said, though, even in her testimony, that the Crohn's was really just as bad, if not worse, after that colon resection. And it is what.
But she lived and worked with Crohn's prior to the problem with the colon arising for what, 15 years? I mean, it was a long. She's suffered. It's a shame. She's suffered from this disease for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Your Honor. And in a sense,
she says, as of 2005. She's diagnosed, but she says then she's already suffered from the disease for 16 years. So now we're in our, 20-some.
Correct. In her testimony, and she does say that the Crohn's has gotten worse over the last 10 years, and we're looking back at this point from 2013. So the Crohn's got worse in 2003. She had the colon resection in 2005. She essentially worked but took a lot of time off from 2005 to 2008 and then stopped working in 2008. There's really nothing more that can be done for the Crohn's except for medication intervention. And it's really the treatment of the Crohn's by the ALJ that we really take issue with. In this case, I think the ALJ failed to give any limitations with respect to the claimant's, I represent them in court and we call them a claimant there. But
no, we understand what you're saying. But yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the ALJ's opinion, but sort of around page 8, there's a paragraph in which she turns to the Crohn's discussion, but one of the problems, she says, is that actual documented instances of the flare-ups are not at all well documented. That's a little redundant, but anyway, none of the serious complications of Crohn's disease described in the listing section are documented. And so the ALJ doesn't conclude she's 100% well, but says it's under fairly good control. And I guess it's, beginning of the that same paragraph is where she says the claimant has had Crohn's disease for many years and was able to work with that condition.
Right, and I'm looking at the same part of the decision you're looking at, Judge. What I find, the judge characterizes it as being under fairly good control, and she looks to periods of flare-ups as evidence that essentially, okay, it really only causes limitations during these periods of flare-ups. But if you look at the record, at the record at page 367 in June of 2011, she reported a flare-up with constant diarrhea 6 to 9 times per day. But then during, I guess what you wouldn't call a flare-up, because it's not called a flare-up in the medical records, at record 375, January 24th, 2012, the plaintiff told the doctor she still has to go to the bathroom 6 to 9 times per day. And in a function report, which is in March of 12, a key date because it's the last period of her insurance, at record page 182, she says she has no control over her functioning in terms of having to go to the bathroom. So the judge, I think, is taking these flares out of context and saying that the flares are the only time where she has to urgently go to the bathroom on a regular enough basis for it to preclude work activity.
So is that consistent, though? The judge tries to get the vocational expert to say something about her need to have ready access to a bathroom. The vocational expert says, well, I'm not really sure because, every workplace is a little different, but on the other hand, doing the kind of desk work that she was doing, typically it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. So that would seem to me that consideration is built into what the ALJ is thinking about.
Well, I guess the key point really, Judge, is thinking about, because in the end, I don't see the judge attribute any limitations in the RFC, the residual functional capacity, to the plaintiff's Crohn. She goes out of her way, for example, and by way of illustration, I note that in looking at the judge's decision, close to where you were looking, I believe it's page 22, at the top of page 22 of the judge's decision, I'm sorry, it's page 8, the same page you were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
At the top she says, she has a lot of analysis about the claimant's neck pain, which is part of her problem but not really her most disabling impairment in my view. And she says the treatment records fail to show any consistent ongoing hand or neck pathology which would limit her work abilities beyond the lifting limitation included in this decision. So the judge is limiting the plaintiff to light work, it looks like, specifically because of her neck condition. But there's nothing in the judge's residual functional capacity that addresses any limitation with respect to her Crohn's. And if you look further at the vocational expert's testimony that you were referring to a minute ago, he hems and haws about proximity to the bathroom, but then ultimately he says if a person needed 2 extra 10-minute breaks in a day, in addition to the breaks that are already provided at 10 minutes in length, that would generally be considered an accommodated position. This is on page 57 of the record, page 27 of the transcript. So the vocational expert is setting a pretty low bar. He's saying if this person urgently has to go to the bathroom and spends 10 minutes extra 2 times a day, that would eliminate her ability to do competitive work. And how I tie that in is the judge does not seem to he seems limited to light work because of the neck pain, but doesn't seem to give any limitations with all respect with respect to the Crohn's.
Okay. You should probably save to your last minute.
So. I will. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Buddy?
May it please the court. My name is Stephen Buddy. I'm here on behalf of the appellee commissioner. This is a case where the ALJ assessed significant limitations to accommodate plaintiffs, and there are no medical opinions that plaintiff had greater limitations than the ALJ assessed.
So where does the ALJ resolve what could be the important question, whether these bathroom breaks need to be 5 minutes apiece, which seems to be somehow within normal workplace constraints, or 10 minutes apiece?
The ALJ doesn't make a specific finding about that.
But doesn't that, as Mr. Brown was saying, doesn't that make all the difference? If they're 10 minutes apiece, all of a sudden, you know, 6 times 10 would be an hour. You know, if it's at the low end of 6 a day, if it's 9, it's an hour and a half. If it's only 5 minutes apiece, then one could imagine, you know, visiting the restroom before the workday begins, 2 hours later, 2 hours later. That's just 3 breaks during the day, and one of them probably coincides with lunch. Very easy to see that that probably doesn't preclude employment. But isn't this important?
Well, a couple points on that. The most critical thing is that this case was decided at step 4, where the ALJ found that plaintiff could perform her past work as a shipping checker as she actually performed that job. And plaintiff's testimony at the hearing was that she had needed to use the restroom with the same frequency since the year before her colon surgery in 2005. She worked in the shipping checker position in 2004 and 2005. So based on her testimony at the hearing, the need to use the bathroom didn't impact her ability to do that work as she had performed it in the past. The second point is, as you mentioned, the vocational expert did testify that the claimant would be allowed 3 to 4 restroom breaks, 1 break every 2 hours, in addition to regular breaks that are provided.
That's but those are 5-minute breaks, right?
5-minute breaks, yes.
So if she needs 10, I'm just trying to play through this. I'm just a little surprised that you don't have a finding from the ALJ. I don't think the record supports 10, you know, because she held down the other job. It's not up to us to speculate, but why did that happen?
The critical point, again, is just that she had worked in the shipping checker job in the past with the same level of frequency needing to use the restroom. The record didn't compel the ALJ to find that she needed a specific limitation.
But we don't know, based on the past work, whether she just happened to have a very forgiving employer who didn't mind if she was away from her desk for 10-minute periods of time, or whether, you know, she was really staying within 5 minutes. We don't know any of those details, which might be relevant to her ability to have future comparable work at the step 4 level even.
Well, what's critical is that the ALJ found that she could perform her past work as she had actually performed it. The statute...
I understand the ALJ said that, and believe me, after all these years, I certainly understand the difference between step 4 and step 5. But what I don't see in the record is what we sometimes encounter. Sometimes people say, you know, even though I needed to take a lot of extra time off work, my employer was very flexible, you know, they let me work an extra half hour at the end of the day or whatever, maybe they just let me not be at my desk as much. Sometimes you see that. Sometimes you see work to rule employers who really mean 5 minutes and that's it. And we don't know why her particular past work was something that something she could manage.
Well, I would point out that the burden of proof is on plaintiff to establish that she can't do her past work, and if the record doesn't indicate that she was accommodated in that position, then it's plaintiff's burden to show that, not the ALJ's. In addition, in terms of mental impairments, there's an issue where the ALJ found that the mental impairments were non-severe and did not include any limitations in the RFC finding. First of all, the ALJ's finding that the impairments were non-severe is supported by the medical opinions of Dr. Lowe, who reviewed the record initially, and Dr. Heinemann, who reviewed the complete record and testified at the hearing. These opinions are uncontradicted. No doctor indicated that she had an impairment, a severe impairment, or any work-related limitations due to that impairment. In addition, the ALJ didn't just find at step two that she had a non-severe impairment and then ignored mental impairments. She discussed the evidence in the section of the decision detailing her RFC finding. She considered plaintiff's reports that she had no difficulty concentrating, paying attention, following instructions, or getting along with others. She considered that plaintiff received no medication beyond her primary care providers. She gave significant weight to the medical opinions.
There's some hint in the record that her failure to follow up on some of these things and the limited medication comes for economic reasons, which would destroy an inference that she's not getting the medication because she feels fine. Maybe she's not getting the medication because she can't afford it.
Well, she's getting medication from her primary care physician, and she testifies to that. There's no indication that she's unable to see her. I mean, she certainly sees her primary care doctor when she has symptoms of depression. I don't see any clear indication that financial constraints are limiting her ability to get care. In addition,
she postpones the colonoscopy forever, though. Maybe it's just she doesn't want to do it, but, you know, this recurs and recurs in the record.
I'm not sure that there's clear evidence, though, that she's unable to see that she's ever referred to even see a specialist or that she is unable to do so for financial reasons. There's evidence that she went to family counseling sessions. Those records aren't included. But there's certainly evidence that she was able to see some sort of professional for family counseling issues. Also, in terms of physical impairments, I'd point out that the ALJ gave some weight to Dr. Belinsky's opinion. Dr. Belinsky considered her Crohn's disease. Also, Dr. Belinsky considered that she alleged needing to use the bathroom 6 to 9 times per day, but he found that she could still perform a range of medium work even with those conditions. And there's no opinion from any doctor that contradicts Dr. Belinsky's opinion. Plaintiff also alleges that the ALJ should have obtained more evidence, but she was represented by counsel below, and it was her burden to prove the claim. The record the ALJ developed included treatment notes, consultative examination, medical opinions from reviewers and a medical expert. And plaintiff specifically advised ALJ at the hearing that she had no written evidence additional to submit. It was plaintiff's burden to prove that her limitations prevented her from performing her past work. The ALJ recently relied on the uncontradicted opinions of record in finding that she was not disabled. Unless this court has further questions, we would ask that the court affirm the ALJ's decision.
All right, apparently not. Thank you very much. Mr. Brown.
Yes, Your Honors. The defendant asserts that there were no medical opinions in the record from the claimant's treating sources, and that is true in terms of a explicit medical opinion that she can't work because of her Crohn's. There's nothing in the record that says that. What we are asserting here is that the claimant's allegations, which are well documented in the record about the frequency of her Crohn's, weren't analyzed or explained explicitly enough by the ALJ. So regardless of those medical opinions, I do think that, especially in conjunction with what the vocational expert said here, that the claimant presented enough evidence of her limitations with regards to Crohn's, and that the ALJ just didn't explicitly deal with that evidence in rendering her decision. Had the ALJ explicitly dealt with that evidence, she would have had to say something like she has to take X amount of rest periods per day that are unexpected.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.